of notoriety, the Brown's Chicken case, where if you remember, that's where the somebody killed 7 people out of the Brown Chickens, and I had the case where the some people were suing Brown's Chicken, the you know, the franchisee and Brown's Chicken himself, and for like they were negligent as far as any kind of safety measures and that kind of stuff, and so we did all sorts of discovery on that, and there was lots of questions about they can get the investigative, because this was many years after, whether they can get the investigative files. And the question is, when it's, you know, the investigation is still going on, there's a privilege with regard to investigative privilege. And so I had to go through a lot of the records and stuff, and eventually I dismissed the case, affirmed. And but that was a good one. And then another one, Mancow Mueller was being sued by Keith Van Horn, who was a bear, Chicago Bear. And he was working at the same station he was on, and Mueller said that Van Horn accosted him and threatened him and all this kind of, this guy's a maniac and he's a wild man, he should be thrown in jail and all this kind of stuff. And they made songs about him, parodies, you know, and reported on the news. And according to Van Horn, none of it ever happened. And so he sued him for defamation. And that case ended up settling, but it was kind of interesting. What was the question was whether they could sue the radio station for negligent hiring and supervision. And the arguments were, one, that you couldn't, because it would be such a be a problem with the First Amendment, you know, hinder speech. And the other argument was that you had to show, in order to do that, you had to show they had similar conduct. So one of the arguments, they did show that he did all these crazy, lots of crazy things, but nothing quite like this. So I ruled, I threw the negligent super, I left the defamation claim against him in, but I threw the claim out against the radio station saying that it was a violation of the First Amendment. You really couldn't do that, and there was no similar conduct. And the Supreme Court, appellate court reversed me. It was, what made me laugh was one of the arguments was that if you did this, this radio stations would never hire this guy. It would be such a problem with, because they'd be liable for all this stuff, and they really didn't have any control over it, and they would never hire this guy. And so I got reversed. So this was still pending against the radio station. And right after that, they re-signed him to about a, quadrupled his salary. I said, well, I guess that there goes that argument. But what ended up happening was then the Supreme Court took it and reversed the appellate court and affirmed me, saying there were no similar conduct, and they really never got to the First Amendment issue. But that was interesting. I don't know. I'm sure there's lots more, but...
I had a question. What do you mean about discovery in the case?
What that is when you file a lawsuit, and then between the time of the lawsuit going to trial, each side has a right to find out the positions of the other side, and you do it through discovery. And the way you do it is initially you will usually file interrogatories and document requests. So in the interrogatory, you'll say, you know, who are your witnesses, what are your injuries, what are your bills, et cetera. And then the plaintiff will come and say, you know, try to get facts with regards to, you know, to help support his case. And then they'll send out document requests. Give me all the documents, you know, example, in the Mancow Mueller, give me every document you've ever been, you've ever reprimanded Mancow Mueller for. Or in the other case, give me all your medical records. And then somebody can either produce them, or they'll come and say, well, no, these are privileged because of what attorney-client privilege or medical, you know, doctor-patient privilege or whatever the privilege may be. So basically, so they go back and forth producing documents, and if there's any disputes, then it comes to the judge, and the judge decides, well, whether if there really is a privilege or not a privilege, or if it's too broad or if it's relevant or whatever the case may be, because generally speaking, they'll ask for as many they hope they get as many documents as they can, and they hope they find something. And so that's kind of the discovery. And then after that, what they do is once they get all the documents and they interact with us, then they'll start taking depositions. So then they'll bring people in, and then they'll ask people questions under oath. So the theory is that you get all the information, so there's no surprises at trial. You really know what's going to happen at trial. So what I did was, when I went up to Law Division, I was assigned pretty much close to Judge O'Connell, so I did stuff off of the assignment call. Now, the assignment call is where they actually take it. When the case is ready for trial, the judge of the Law Division will assign cases to the various judges to try. And so they also have lots of motions off that call, you know, and I'm undiscovered motion. So I did that, and I also did jury trials. So I did both of them for probably a year, year and a half. Then my wife got sick, and so then they assigned me call the progress call, which was really just kind of monitoring cases, and there really wasn't any kind of brain work particularly. And then after a little while, I went to a motion call. And a motion call is, and I did that for 10 or for 12 years, a long time, until I retired. And that does, when a case is filed, it immediately gets a letter, A, B, C, D, E, F. And I was F. And so it's assigned to F, then the motion judge will do everything up until the trial itself. So every motion, any if you try to settle it, anything dealing with the case, any discovery disputes, then you handle it. And the motions being motions to dismiss or motions for summary judgment, motions saying jurisdiction that shouldn't be in Cook County, it should be someplace else. And motions to dismiss are, you look at the pleadings, and based on the pleadings, you say, this guy doesn't have a case. I'll believe everything he says here, he still doesn't have a case. Motion for summary judgment, they do discovery, so they'll take the depositions, and then they get all the facts, and they say, well, here are all the facts, here's what all these people said, he doesn't have a case. And then you decide that, so you just throw it out before it goes to trial. And that's what I did for a bunch of years. And then you also, in all this motion, it started in the last, 6 or 8 years, you monitor the case, you make sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, why haven't you done this? Why haven't you done this? You're going to be in trial in a certain time, you've got to be ready. And that's kind of what it is.
Now you mentioned in the case with Keith Van Horn and Matt Colin mm-hmm. Mueller that the appellate court reversed your decision. Now, did that sort of thing happen to you often? And when it did happen, how did you feel about it?
Did it happen often? I would say not too often. Mm-hmm. The key to it is, you got to remember, I'm probably making lots of decisions every day that are appealable. And you have two sides arguing their points. So you have lots of chances to be reversed. The other issue is many of these issues are extremely, obviously they're bringing it because they're not, it's close. There's cases on both sides. There's nothing white on point. So they're all, a lot of them are very close issues. I would do 3 or 4 motions like that a day. So you only have so much time. The appellate court would spend weeks on the same motion. So if I got reversed, would it bother me? You always want to get it right, but not particularly. You know, you do the best you can, and you be as fair as you can, and if they think it should be this way rather than that way, as long as they don't criticize you or say you didn't know what you're talking about or didn't do the research or didn't read the stuff, which that never happened. But a lot of these issues are very, you can go either way. And you go the way you think, but if they go the other way, that's okay. And the next time you follow what they say. I had one that was kind of interesting where it was a death of a baby in a malpractice case. And the question, in mal, it's you have a statute of limitations, and you can file it within 2 years or when you discover the malpractice, so it can be extended. And there's a rule that says if it's a sudden, it's a sudden impact type situation where it would put anybody on notice that there was negligence, so therefore the discovery rule doesn't apply, you have to do it within 2 years. And for some reason the appellate court had decided that the death of a baby is that kind of situation where it's so traumatic you should be on notice, so you just have the 2 years. And I had a case where it was twins or something like that where died shortly thereafter. Maybe it wasn't. I think the case I was relying on was, but it was, the baby died maybe 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, and they felt the cases, I thought, said that that was a traumatic event and it would you wouldn't have discovery rule. And I ruled, I have two cases right within the next week, and I ruled and I said I didn't think this was appropriate, I didn't think it was right, but I thought that was the case law and I was required to follow it. So I had two cases, and within a week, like a year or two later, both opinions came down pretty closely. One was affirmed, one was reversed, because there were different panels. But what happened was, what was good, was that the one that was I was reversed on was published. Sometimes they don't have to publish the opinions, and that was, so that's precedent, so that's the, that was what you should follow, and I felt that was the right way. So you discovery, it wasn't a sun event, I didn't think, and you should have the discovery. But so that's the kind of thing. So, you know, do I get upset? But did I get upset? Really not. I did not. I figured if that's what, you know, if I was wrong, somebody should change my way. So I didn't get too upset, no.
Okay. What kind of boards did you sit on during your profession, or what kind of organizations did you belong to?
You know, when you're a judge, you really can't be on anything raising money that put your name on it. So I was on, I a little bit waffled on it, but I really didn't, you know, it's basically church stuff. So I ran parties and stuff, and I really didn't make any money, but it was like St. Patrick's Day party, you go off on it. So I was active in that stuff. I sat on the board at St. Scholastica's. What else? Let's see. That's kind of it. I was not in any kind of legal boards or anything like that. I can think of.
And what sort of things did you do at St. Scholastica?
Nothing really there. I was just on a board, and I would go to a meeting once a year, twice a year, just because my sister-in-law is a nun up there. So.
Yeah. So it had more to do with family connections, yeah, than anything having to do with,
right,
your career. Okay. Now, what about the system of retention? How many times did you come up for retention?
I ran once. So, and then the retention is every 6 years. So, twice. And the third time would have been when I decided I wasn't going to go retention. So I didn't do it. But I served a full 6 years.
And what's the process like? Or what was it like for you?
It was, you had to fill out a form and all the, you know, people who appear before you and that kind of stuff. But in some ways, it was good because you get some feedback. And so you go before the, you know, 30 lawyers. First of all, they sign two lawyers or three, however many, who will then call all the people who have just appeared before you and see, you know, how you, if they like you or not and all that kind of stuff. And then they want a list of all your decisions, all your appeals, whether you're affirmed or reversed. They want to see what was there. So they'll interview lots and lots of lawyers and then report back to the committee, and then you come in and the committee interviews you. So it's nice to have a feedback. You know, everybody said nice things, so it was nice. I mean, you feel like you're doing a good job. Sometimes that doesn't happen with other people, but it did with me. So, you know, for me, it was not a hard process. You didn't have to raise any money. You don't raise any money, you don't campaign, you don't do anything like this. I never did. You just go before the bar associations, they say you're qualified, and then you, hopefully, and then that's it.
Did you ever have any worries going into the retention that maybe, like, you know?
Truthfully, no.
No?
No, I never did.
I might have figured I would.
I mean, I guess, you know, you never know for sure, but I would have been, if I was found not qualified, I would have been surprised, I must admit.
Were you ever called before a disciplinary committee?
No.
I probably could have guessed that. Okay, so the Democratic political machine in Cook County.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned before that things were sort of changing when you became a judge.
Mm-hmm.
But did you ever feel a sense that it still had some weight in your profession?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It certainly has weight in so far as getting slated and and getting on the bench. I mean, if by getting slated, it's still important process. I've never looked at statistics, but I assume most of the people who have been slated still win. Is it as much? No. Do people still, if you had a choice between getting slated and not getting slated, would you want to get slated? Yes. So it has an impact in there. I think it probably has even more of an impact now because they've changed the way the elections. They've eliminated a lot of the associate spots. That's why there's not as much distinction. They made more full circuits. And now for a lot of the elections you're in, instead of, when I ran, it was citywide or other people was countywide. So you had a whole, 5 million voters, whatever it is. Now a lot of the votes it's in districts, so it's more concentrated. And in theory, I think the political process, so you have 3 or 4 committeemen, and they could control it more than if you the whole citywide. Well, there's not a heck of a lot they can do. This was after my time, but I just feel that probably you're more beholden to get elected. They have not more beholden, but they have more influence in an outcome of an election because it's a more concentrated area. If that's true or not, I don't know, but it seems to me it probably is.
Okay, what about the distinction of Cook County politics and other things involving, the Cook County government as being corrupt?
Does that have any effect as far as a judge? The answer is no.
Well, maybe not for you, but did you see it at all?
I did not. I mean, nobody. I obviously was the most naive person in the whole world, and I was like Greylord when everybody had traffic. Now, this was before my, but I'm sure I was over there. I mean, I didn't do much work at traffic court, but sure I went over with friends or something like that, or myself, I got a ticket, I suppose. And I mean, people had to know about it, I suppose. The Greylord was when there, it was a big, where they found judges and I suppose lawyers too, were taking bribes and stuff like that. But I never saw it, and I was absolutely shocked, and I'm sure other people say, you got to be kidding me, but I'm sure I'm naive, but I never ever saw it. And did I ever think anybody like on the bench when I was practicing or, was somehow, the answer is no, I didn't.
So did you feel that Operation Greylord did anything to tarnish the respectability at all of
tremendously, for sure. I mean, you got however many judges going to jail, it's a terrible. Hopefully, I would assume it improved the judiciary greatly. I think it did. When I was on the bench, I never ever saw anything like that. And I can honestly say in 20 years, I never had anybody ever even approach me or pretend they, try to influence me in any way. And you listen to Greylord, and it sounds like that wasn't the case before, so I don't know. So did it hurt the reputation of the judiciary and as all lawyers? Absolutely, 100%, yes. Hopefully it's better. Now, I didn't have lunch.
Are there any other sentiments you'd like to share about the topic of corruption?
No, just that obviously that you have to be aware of it all the time. I think if you have a reputation of impartiality and honesty and no one would ever dare come say anything to you, try to influence you because they know if you did, you report it right away. And as long as you have that reputation out there, then you're fine. I can honestly say I've never, ever had a problem. I remember one time a kind of acquaintance started talking about a case that was before me, and all I did was next day went, got all the lawyers together, and I recused myself and said this guy was talking about the case. I'm sure it was inadvertent. Well, it was not. I don't have any idea. And I just assigned it to another. It just got assigned to another judge. So I suppose that would be the only time. But that had nothing to do with political corruption. That was just a guy who I, you know, a friend who came by and started talking about a case. And whether he knew I had it or not, I don't know. But I just recused myself the next day and disclosed it to everybody. It's easier to do that in Cook County because there's so many judges. What's hard is in these smaller districts where there's only one or two judges and everybody knows everybody. But, you know, I guess on that hand, everybody knows everybody. So you know both sides, so it doesn't make any difference.
Interesting. Now, did you become a judge when Harold Washington was mayor?
I can't remember when Harold Washington was mayor. I don't think so. I think I was attorney general when Harold Washington was mayor.
Okay. Because I was going to ask, and maybe you can still comment on this, if there were any changes judges like yourself might have experienced when a new city mayor was elected.
I can't speak back then. Would it make any difference between, I guess maybe I was, I don't remember when Harold Washington left, but would it make any difference who the mayor was? None. To me. I can't imagine it with anybody else, but no.
It was kind of like looking for the perfect opportunity. You had mentioned that with you being so social and your family being so important, your wife was sick about 10, 20, or 15 years ago?
15 years ago.
About 15, okay. How was it to manage your family life with both your wife being ill, and where were your kids age-wise and all of this? Were they in school at this point, or?
Yeah, well, she wasn't ill very long.
Okay.
She got sick in the end of July, and she was operated on the beginning of August, and she died the beginning of September. So it was a very fast process. And my kids were, one was in sixth grade, one was a sophomore, and one was a senior. And it was a very difficult time. It was terrible. But in truth, as I told you, the assignment I got wasn't particularly difficult. And so it made it much easier to be around the kids a lot. And because I was a typical Irish husband, I didn't do a thing. So all of a sudden, now you're doing everything. And but it's worked out. And it's been okay.
So a son and a daughter?
Two sons who were both lawyers, and then the youngest was a daughter. Sixth grader was a daughter.
Okay. The boys, one was a senior, one was in college?
One was a senior in high school, and one was a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
They were at Loyola.
What does your daughter do?
She now is in North Carolina because there's a boyfriend there, and she's working at the University of North Carolina.
Do you think your sons are going to aspire to be judges at some point?
My oldest son would definitely like to be, in my opinion. He's a state's attorney, and that's there's a lot of states. I think he would. My middle son, I don't know. He is doing Donahue Brown, doing insurance defense work. I'm not sure. It wouldn't shock me if both of them would like to be. I mean, I think they saw that I liked it a lot. And so it wouldn't surprise me.
Now, as a recently retired judge, what reflections at all, now that you're on sort of the other side, do you have on the Cook County's judiciary system?
I can say that the people I know, my friends, are extremely conscientious. Smart, well prepared, and they absolutely want to do what's right. And I think that's all. I think what you want to convey is that you've heard the case, you've listened to the case, you've read the case, you've looked at all the material, you've analyzed it, you've done everything, and then you decide. And that's all you can ask for. And one side's going to think you're smart, one guy's going to think you're dumb. But at least they'll know that, you know, you're prepared. And the other thing I think is important is you treat the lawyers with respect, because it's an extremely hard job. It's a very difficult job being a lawyer. And so I think you have an obligation to treat not only the lawyers, but everyone in front of you, you know, with respect. And it's how you'd want to be treated. And I think you use that philosophy, and you really have very little problems with the lawyers or people. I mean, they generally treat you the same way. Because it is. I mean, the whole nature of the beast is confrontation. I mean, it's a adversary type proceeding, and you're the one that has to keep it within bounds of decency, where the, you know, kind of the calming influence. And I think that's important to do. And I think as a judge, you can do that, and that's what you have to do.
Okay, now, since you've retired, Associate Judge Preston L. Bowie Jr. Mm-hmm. took your spot?
No.
No?
Oh, took my spot as...
He was appointed to your vacancy?
To vacancy. I thought you meant my spot on what I was doing in the motion call. No. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any sort of transitional process that occurs when somebody...
That really has nothing, you know, that's just a vacancy and they fill them. It really has nothing to do with what I was doing. More importantly, I was in the motion call for 12 years and they just appointed a judge to take my call. And is there any problem? You know, I talked to him for a while about that and he kept my clerks and I still, you know, if he had a question, I would answer it to him, you know. But as far as Judge Bowie, I don't even know where he's assigned, tell you the truth. I don't know. I don't think he's in law division. I'm not exactly sure where he is. So there's really no connection that way.
And when you retire, do you complete all the cases that are before you? And then
hope so. I wrote a lot of orders the day before I left. So that was the idea. I think there might have been one or two that I didn't. But ideally, yes, you do. I mean, that's what you want to do. You don't want to make anybody do the same thing over again, but somebody else.
Okay. And were there any awards that you received over the course of your tenure?
Celtic Man of the Year.
Celtic Man of the Year.
Or Celtic, whatever. You're like. I got that.
are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
The Celtic Lawyers Association. Okay. Celtics Lawyers Association. Okay. So I got that.
Excellent.
I don't think that's
the kind of award I would want.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great party. I think that's probably it.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. And are you still active at all with the Cook County judicial system?
Basically what I do now is mediations and arbitrations. So, and what that basically is when people, rather than going through litigation in the courts, they'll come to me and I'll try either, a mediation generally would be me trying to bring both sides together to settle the case. And a binding arbitration would be like a mini bench trial where the people will come and they'll agree upon all the various documents so they don't have to put any foundation. So I'll have all the medical records or all the depositions. And then they can put a couple of people on to testify before me and they'll do that under oath. And then I'll make a decision what, you know, the case is worth $20 million or $20,000, something like that. So in that way, and it's basically the same lawyers who appeared before me. So I'm extremely busy doing that.
Have you had any interesting cases that you'd want to talk about in this regard?
I think the agreement says it's confidential, so probably not.
Okay.
But it's the same cases. I mean, it's basically the same cases, and people realize, it's kind of the speech I give, one, the risk involved, you never know what's going to happen. So the compromise is much better off, and they realize the cost involved. You know, doctors, and if you have to pay, you know, your attorney's fees, et cetera, it costs thousands. It's an expensive process. And I tell people that the time, you know, it can take a number of years, lots of years to go to trial this way, it can get done with sooner. And then I tell people also the emotional impact on your life, especially plaintiffs having to go through the process. It's, you know, being put on the stand, sitting through a trial, it's difficult. So if you can settle it, it's a good thing. And we'll settle. I think people like to, what's nice about it, I think people, especially plaintiffs, want someone to hear their concerns, you know, why they think they deserve it. And it's almost a way to air some of their grievances. And I think they like, once that's done, then at least they can feel they can move on and try to settle the case. But it's a good, I mean, you're settling hundreds and hundreds of cases, so it just, you know, it's such a good thing for the court system. And the court system is now pushing it very much. In First Municipal, all cases are arbitrated by through a court process. And so, it's, I mean, it's definitely this for the future to try to alternative dispute resolution is definitely the way to go. And it's financially great for me. Now I get paid for doing this stuff. Yeah, it's great.
It's all voluntary for you?
No, I get paid.
You do get paid. That's very good.
Yeah, I get paid.
You do get paid for that. Okay.
Sure.
Are you getting paid through the court?
No.
System, or
no, these are, I've pretty much done it where either people call me individually, or most of them, it's an outfit called AD. There's lots of different mediation systems. I'm working for ADR Systems, and they'll call them, and then they'll hire me, and they'll hire ADR Systems, and then I'm like an independent contractor with ADR Systems. But it's nice. What has turned out, it's nice financially for sure, but it's also nice, I think it's kind of rewarding, because my call, literally, when I said one person hates you and one person likes you, I mean, that's basically what you did every day, was you have two people and you rule for one guy, and so it's I found it rewarding that people will come and hire you, because obviously then they must have thought you were at least fair and did a good job on the bench. And I always think of myself as a judge more than a mediator or even a lawyer, and that was rewarding for me, and still is, because I'm very busy.
All right, we'll start wrapping it up here.
Okay, good.
And what I would ask, a couple things I have to ask you to end this on is, do you have any general reflections that you'd like to share based on your experiences as a judge or a lawyer?
No, just a bit. I believe, especially in this climate where people don't think so, but I think so. I think being a lawyer is an extremely honorable profession. And needless to say, I'd recommend to my children or my grandchildren. And being a judge is, I think, the pinnacle of that profession. And I love being a judge. Best job in the world. And I thank God that I was able to do it.
Now, one thing that I've taken from some things that you've said that I think is interesting, and I wonder how many other judges would share the sentiment with you, as you keep alluding to it and in fact saying how much fun you've had in your career. And and especially something you said is out of adversarial situation, which I find interesting, and I don't know if you can comment some more on that.
As far as being a lawyer, I can't say being a lawyer at all times was fun, because it's you know, you have so many other things going besides practicing. That's why the law, you know, you're worried about financially, and you're worried about getting business, and you're worried about winning or losing. That's why the Attorney General's office was so good, because you weren't worried about, you know, you knew what you were going to make, and you weren't worried about getting business, and you were worried about your clients, but it wasn't like some poor person whose life's going to be over if you lose the case. So that's why it was good. As far as being on the bench, I liked it. I enjoyed the lawyers, and I enjoyed the interaction with the lawyers. And when you say as far as adversarial process, it's just one side and the other side. Are, you know, if you didn't have this, the people have to settle their disputes some other way. They'd be shooting each other. So this is where people are very emotional. You get some, you know, like divorces, or even in, you know, these kind of, I mean, people are very, very emotional. This is their life in front of you. And so that's why you have to really treat these people with respect and with kid gloves. And even with lawyers. I mean, the lawyer, this will be his case. And if he loses this case, you know, he's just lost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he might be out of business, and you know, he's got to feed his kids, and it's a very emotional type thing for lawyers too. And so it doesn't make any difference. I mean, it doesn't affect how you rule. You still rule how you rule. But you have to, when you, you know, if you, I always say, when you, if you grant, you throw somebody's case out, you have to feel, you have to at least show that you feel terrible about it. And you really feel bad, and you wish you didn't have to, but you got to. So it's not like, hey, you idiot, why did you ever file this case in the first place? You have to try to, I think, show people the proper respect. And that's kind of what I was saying.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nope. It was fun. I liked it. Become a judge. Become a lawyer, become a judge. It's great.
All right. Well, I think we'll end there.
Okay.